This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 224 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I was locked into the NFL Combine this past weekend. I was tweeting about it. I was tracking results in my spreadsheets. I was explaining what a three-cone drill was to my seven-month-old daughter. I was in. My weekend was the NFL Combine. I'm a believer that the Combine matters. The correlation between a guy's 40 time and how he plays at the next level isn't strong in some, but there's more to the combine than just that. We get height and weight measurements. We see how these guys look catching passes in shorts. And the drills themselves can help paint a picture into the type of athletes these guys are. When I'm looking at the data that comes from the combine, I'm looking for outliers. I'm mostly just making sure that players who are productive in college and have strong college profiles are also at least average athletically when testing. But I also recognize that the combine can help a player's draft stock. Miles Boykin went from being a player who wasn't expected to be drafted very high to one who could go a round or two earlier based on what he did this past weekend. Alex Barnes had one of the best days testing at running back, and now all of a sudden you've got more people giving him a second look. We know draft equity matters for fantasy purposes. And if the combine can impact that for a handful of players, then we should at least pay attention to the combine for only that fact. But there are thresholds that we want some of these players to hit as well. If there's a wide receiver whose best trait is his speed, he better run a good 40. If he runs a really slow one, then we should probably look at that prospect a little bit differently. There are winners and losers at the combine each year, and on today's show, I'm going to look at those players. I'll be focusing just on running backs and wide receivers as I have over the last month because we're concerned with fantasy football here. The majority of you guys are concerned about your dynasty rookie and startup drafts, and maybe you just want to leg up on your competition. Before digging into those winners and losers, I wanted to let you know about FanDuel's Hot Streak contest that's running through March 11th. Each day, there's one featured streak-eligible contest that you can play with tons of cash prizes up for grabs. If you have at least one lineup finish in the top 50% of users, then your streak continues. Your longest streak until March 11th will be rewarded, and to top it off, whoever achieves the longest streak could win $25,000 in cash. So head over to FanDuel.com or download the FanDuel app and get started. I think the obvious place to start today's show is with DK Metcalf. If you haven't listened to my two episodes on which players at running back and wide receiver produced like studs in college, I'd probably listen to those before this one today. They're episode 220 and 222. It's just a good background on some of these guys and the way that I think about prospecting. But DK Metcalf burned down football Twitter when he ran a 4.33 40 at 228 pounds. The weight aspect is really important there too. There's a metric that Bill Barnwell created about a decade ago called speed score, which is a formula that weight adjusts a player's 40-yard dash. We shouldn't expect a dude who weighs 230 pounds to run faster than one who weighs 180 pounds. So we shouldn't just straight up compare their 40s. That's why speed score exists. It's not the most exact measurement in the world, but it's a better one than looking at raw 40s. For wide receivers, Sean Siegel once made a modification to the speed score formula where you just multiply a player's speed score by a player's height in inches divided by 73 to factor in height. So a wideout who's 6'1" doesn't have any height adjustments, but a player who's 6'5" gets a little bit more love for being taller. Now I'll be referencing speed score and height adjusted speed score because I found that most successful players in fantasy football had at least average or above average speed scores. Of the players who have had multiple 13-plus PPR points per game seasons at running back since 2011, so it's 32 players who have had multiple top 20 or so seasons, the lowest speed score was 91.7. And just 11 of those 32 players had a speed score under 100. That number means absolutely nothing to you, but 100 is a good speed score. It's about a 65th percentile score. Looking at wide receivers who have had multiple 14 or more PPR point per game seasons over the same time frame, we get 36 receivers. So 36 wideouts have had multiple top 20 seasons, or roughly top 20, since 2011. Of those players, only 7 had height-adjusted speed scores that ranked below average. So 81% of the players had height-adjusted speed scores that placed them higher than the 50th percentile. And what's funny is that two of those players were slot wideouts for Tom Brady and Wes Welker and Julian Edelman. And a shout-out to playerprofiler.com in helping provide the speed scores for the guys who didn't run at the combine. Player Profiler runs adjustments for pro days. So just given this information, we have some thresholds that we'd ideally want these players to meet. And that's just with speed score in the 40-yard dash. So let's get back to DK Metcalf. He ran a 4.33 at 228 pounds, which gave him a height-adjusted speed score of almost 134. Again, that number probably means nothing to you. but the only player who's had a better height-adjusted speed score in my database was Calvin Johnson. That's why we're all making a big deal out of this. DK Metcalf proved to be a freak of nature when he ran that 40-yard dash. For that alone, he probably is a winner at this year's combine. But I say probably because Metcalf was really poor in the agility drills. His short shuttle and three cone gave him an agility score that ranked in about the fourth or fifth percentile. Why he even participated in those drills, I have no idea. But now we know that there are real concerns here. So Metcalf proved that he has insane straight line speed, but he lacks agility. And that's a reason why we shouldn't just compare him to Julio Jones like we're seeing across social media. The size is there and the height-adjusted speed score is there, but he lacks the agility that we saw from Julio Jones and even Andre Johnson, who I mentioned as Metcalf's higher-end comp entering the combine. I talked last week about how DK Metcalf's lack of college production is probably a little bit overstated by production snobs like myself. He was injured, he had NFL competition playing with him at wide receiver, and he actually had pretty good efficiency regardless of all of that. I don't think we can push it aside, though, as nothing. Why is it that A.J. Brown outproduced him? A.J. Brown's a great prospect, but he's not looked at the same way that Metcalf is. And what happens if A.J. Brown or DeMarcus Lodge aren't actually good? That means that Metcalf was losing targets to not very good players. Now, I think both are good, and I think Metcalf is still a good prospect. Some people may hate this, but I don't have an extreme stance on DK Metcalf. I certainly don't think that he's on Julio Jones level as a prospect, but I also don't think that he's doomed due to his lack of production. And I do think there are serious agility concerns. One comp that I agree with regarding Metcalf is Martavis Bryant. He's like a beefier Martavis Bryant. And that's not a bad thing. When Martavis Bryant had it together, he was really effective on a football field. Would I spend a top 10 pick on a wideout like that? No. But is DK Metcalf still in my top 5 for wideouts in this class? Yes, but he's not my number 1. My number 1 is N'Keal Harry. Harry has the most complete production profile of any player in this class, and he has an insane breakout age as well. The combination of those two things make him a really good prospect. It's why my model loves him. One of the things that stuck out to film guys with Harry was his lack of separation. So his 40-yard dash time became pretty important. I was hoping that he'd run a sub-4.6, but some scouts were just hoping that he'd run a sub-4.7. And he ran a 4.53. It wasn't close to the fastest time in the class, but at 228 pounds and almost 6'3", Harry had a 110 height-adjusted speed score. That's a great number for him. A lot of people think that Metcalf solidified himself as the wide receiver one in this class with his 40 time, and that might be true. He may be the first wideout who's drafted in April, but I still see N'Keal Harry as the best prospect. Two wideouts my prospect model really liked heading into the combine were Hakeem Butler and Andy Isabella. I shared my hesitation with both of them last week. With Butler, I was scared that he was almost too big or that he may end up being too lanky. But he came in under 6'6" and he weighed 227 pounds, so his size isn't much of a concern. And that's awesome because, like I said, my model really, really likes Hakeem Butler. And then he went out and he ran a sub-4.5 40. He had a height-adjusted speed score that was almost as good as Miles Boykin's. So I'm firmly in on Hakeem Butler. I think I'll end up having him as my wide receiver 2 in my pre-draft rankings. The issue with Andy Isabella was that he's a smaller guy who played for a smaller school. So his competition wasn't elite and he had a smaller build. But he was super, super fast. And he is super fast. Some people were comparing him to a Brandon Cooks or a T.Y. Hilton type heading into the combine, and he measured in about an inch shorter than those two guys and around the same weight. The obvious thing that he needed to do was run a fast 40, because Cooks and Hilton are speedy dudes. Isabella's first 40 clocked in at like 4.58, and I was insanely disappointed, because if a player his size is going to transition to the next level and be more than a standard slot receiver, he can't be running a 4.58. But then like an hour later, we found out that there was an issue with the laser during his 40. Isabella actually ran a 4.31, and my pants flew off my body when I saw that official time. Because that means Isabella could really be legit. His production is insane, and he has the speed to be able to play all over the field and be a deep threat. So I'm in on Isabella as well, and I hope that his draft capital is strong so he can find the field quickly. I also hope that he finds a team that can maximize his particular skill set. And the same goes for Paris Campbell. On the wide receiver podcast last week, I mentioned how Campbell didn't quite hit some of the production thresholds that we typically see from successful fantasy receivers. He's also not the typical receiver. A team drafting Campbell is going to want to utilize him like a Swiss Army knife. That always makes me hesitate, not from a real football standpoint, but a fantasy one. Because those types of players usually don't come with a ton of volume. And they typically need to be in a creative offense for them to be super fantasy relevant. I like Paris Campbell as a player, though. And his 4.31 40 is going to raise his draft capital. If he was in a different draft class, he'd probably be a top 5 player in my rankings. but this is a really strong class with some potential wide receiver ones, and my model also isn't in love with Campbell. So because of that, he's out of my top five, even though he should be pretty dynamic at the next level. But he's one wide receiver who absolutely won at the combine. I've touched on Miles Boykin a bit so far in today's show, but he's a huge winner at wide receiver that I want to talk about. There was a really good tweet from Evan Silva this week showing the measurables for Boykin, Julio Jones, and DK Metcalf. And Evan noted that Boykin is the one player who compares most favorably to Jones, not DK Metcalf. And he's right. Because of the agility drills, Boykin really is a closer comp to Jones physically. But you guys know that I care far more about college production than straight-up athleticism. And Boykin's production profile was pretty average. During his final collegiate season, he had about 26% of Notre Dame's receiving yards, just 22% of the team's receptions, and 35% of their touchdowns. And he didn't break out until last year, so his breakout age is really lacking as well. So I see Boykin as a pretty high variance prospect. The athleticism is there, though, and shouldn't be completely ignored. There were two more smaller school guys that I wanted to touch on before moving on to running back winners. One of them is Ashton Doolin, who I talked about on last week's wide receiver show. Doolin was one of two players who fit the successful fantasy wide receiver mold during his final collegiate season. It was him and Andy Isabella. We've got to take that with a grain of salt because Doolin went to Malone University, but he at least produced in market share against that poor competition. I just want to follow up with that Doolin love by saying that he had a pretty good combine. He came in at 6'1", 215 pounds, so he's got pretty good size. And then he finished with a speed score that ranks in almost the 95th percentile, and his agility drills were fine. That's already on top of an elite breakout age and college production. So continue to keep an eye on Ashton Doolin as we approach the draft. But the other guy I want to bring up is Jazz Ferguson. Ferguson's an interesting prospect who came out of high school as a four-star recruit, and then he went to LSU. But he didn't see the field at LSU, and then he was suspended after failing a drug test. So he transferred to Northwestern State, where he had slightly above average market share numbers, but I wouldn't say anything was eye-popping, especially given the competition. But Ferguson came through at the combine with the second best height-adjusted speed score. He's almost 6'5", and he weighs 227 pounds, and he ran a 4.45. Like Metcalf, he didn't do very well in the agility drills, but he's another physically gifted wideout to watch late in the draft. Those are my main winners at wide receiver. There are a ton more that I could talk about, like Emmanuel Hall, who looks like he could be a nice big play threat in the NFL. And actually, I think Hall's a pretty good prospect. He's another winner at the combine. But instead of just talking about everyone, I want to just walk through some of my key observations so that you're not walking away from today's podcast without anything actionable. So with that, let's move on to running back. Let's look at the running back winners. One of the things I noted about this running back class a couple of weeks ago on the show was how landing spot dependent it's going to be. That's usually the case to a degree for running backs, but we also have had pretty good classes of late with high-end prospects. We knew that Ezekiel Elliott and Christian McCaffrey were going to see touches no matter their landing spot. With this class, we don't have the obvious workhorse, so that's why landing spot becomes even more important. Overall, I don't think there were a ton of surprises at running back at the combine. There aren't many freak athletes in this class, and that's especially true of the bigger-bodied guys, some of the potential workhorse backs. But man, one of the most exciting things that happened for me this past weekend was Alex Barnes. Barnes was someone that my model loved because of his final season production at Kansas State. If you remember the running back study I did 2 weeks ago when I compared successful fantasy running backs to this year's class, Barnes' final year production was the only one that clearly fit the mold of being elite. But no one was talking about him, and he was projected to potentially not even be drafted. So to me, instead of him being an obvious top running back in this year's class, he was pegged as someone to watch. And hell yes, Alex Barnes. Barnes ran a sub 4.640 at 226 pounds, giving him an above average speed score of about 102. But then the other drills happened. Barnes had a really good vertical and broad jump. His agility score, according to Player Profiler, ranked in the 89th percentile. And not that it matters, but he did 34 freaking reps on the bench. Alex Barnes came out of the combine as one of the best athletes at running back in this year's class. And that's caused more film guys to give him a second look. And that's going to likely catapult him into more relevant rounds in the draft. The combine probably got Alex Barnes drafted. And when you combine that with what I talked about regarding his production, Barnes to me could end up being a top five back in this class. It's partially because this class is pretty bad, but Barnes himself has a lot of potential. His lack of production until his final season is somewhat of a red flag, but my research has found that final season numbers are by far the most predictive, and he wasn't atrocious in his previous seasons either. So count me in on Alex Barnes. You've got to love when a low-key player you're watching ends up scoring well at the combine. The top speed score this year at running back came from Raquel Armstead. He had pretty good college production too, so that makes me pretty happy. But I want to point out that NumberFire's Brandon Gadula did a study on which running back prospects were most and least efficient last season, and in that study, he looked at the success rates of each prospect versus their teammate's success rate. Now, success rate is defined a little bit differently and not based on expected points, but you get the idea of what success rate would entail. The top player in efficiency versus teammate efficiency was David Montgomery. Number two, though, was Raquel Armstead. So I think he's absolutely someone to watch as we get close to the draft. Justice Hill is another player who helped his draft stock at the combine after running a 4.4 flat in the 40. He's a smaller framed guy at just 198 pounds, but teams are going to be looking for a Philip Lindsay type back, and Hill could be it. The difference, though, is that Hill didn't post crazy good college numbers like Philip Lindsay did. Philip Lindsay was really productive in college, you guys. But I do think that Hill has a chance to be dynamic in the right committee spot in the NFL. There's also Miles Sanders. He's been getting a lot of love recently in the dynasty community and even the draft world, and he had a really, really good combine. He came out as one of the most athletic backs there. It was another good showing for a Penn State running back. And his production profile isn't really that bad. Obviously, he didn't see a lot of work until this past year because Saquon Barkley was there, but in 2018, Sanders had 48% of Penn State's rushing yards, 42% of their attempts, and 26% of the team's rushing touchdowns. But as a receiver, Sanders caught 24 balls for an 11.7% reception share. That's something that I like to see. That final season reception share is fourth best in this class, or fourth best among the players who were at the combine. So when you combine his athleticism with his production profile, I think Sanders is a really intriguing prospect. And he's one who's probably going to end up in my top five once I sit down and try to set some of these rankings. After this weekend, though, my top running back in this class might end up being Daryl Henderson. Henderson doesn't check the usage boxes all that well with just a 34.8% attempt share and 16 carries per game during his final year. But his efficiency was through the roof at Memphis. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago on the running back show. And then he went out and he ran a sub 4.540. That's strong for him. Considering this class doesn't have obvious bell cows, maybe aside from David Montgomery, I could see Henderson as my top back. I think right now it's between him and Montgomery. Those were my winners at running back, though. Alex Barnes, Justice Hill, Raquel Armstead, Miles Sanders, and Daryl Henderson. Let's talk about some losers, and we'll start at wide receiver. I'm very confused by the Riley Ridley love. I mean, I could be wrong, and a good bit of this show probably will sound stupid as hell in a year, but the Riley Ridley stuff is baffling to me. Let's first look at his college production. Ridley didn't do anything significant until 2018, his junior season. And in 2018, he caught 43 passes for 559 yards and 9 touchdowns. When you cite his numbers to any pro-Ridley person, they're going to come back and say that Georgia was a run-first team. So Ridley wasn't going to post big numbers. And they're not wrong. But the thing is, even when you give Ridley's numbers Georgia context, they're still bad. His final season reception share was 17.8%. His final season yard share was 17.6%. And even his 9 touchdowns, which look good on paper, that still accounted for just 26% of Georgia's receiving touchdowns. Riley Ridley's production profile sucks. Like, it sucks to the point that he'll have to be a sincere outlier to hit at the NFL level. If he tested well at the combine, then I probably would have taken a step back and looked at him at least a little bit differently. But he didn't. Riley Ridley didn't show off any special athleticism at the combine. So lack of production, check. Lack of efficiency, check. A poor breakout age, check. Poor athleticism, check. Riley Ridley is an overrated prospect. Of course, there's always a chance that he hits. This is the NFL draft that we're talking about. But on a trends and probability front, Riley Ridley looks like he won't be a fantasy producer at the next level. The same goes for Lil Jordan Humphrey. I wanted him to test well because he actually had pretty good production in college. But then he ran a 4.75 40. He had an 85.5 speed score, which at his size basically means that the only way I'll feel comfortable drafting him in Dynasty is if his landing spot is ideal. But honestly, guys, this draft class at wide receiver is so good that there aren't many other players to highlight as losers. A lot of the players we liked going into the combine showed up at the combine. If you're in need of wide receiver help in Dynasty, you should load up on draft picks this year. But running back is a different story. I don't think there were obvious losers at the combine, but there was one that I want to talk about on today's show. I watched the Netflix documentary Behind the Curve over the weekend, which follows flat earthers on their quest to spread the word that the earth is flat. One of the things that they talked about in this documentary, and it was obvious throughout, is that these flat earth enthusiasts are simply looking for information to confirm their stance rather than looking at things objectively about the earth's shape. It's confirmation bias. Even though they see evidence that the earth is a globe, they try and find evidence that it's not in order to push that aside. And we know objectively that this isn't a good way to analyze anything. But that's what I feel like is happening with Devin Singletary. Singletary has a really unique production profile. He was a beast at scoring touchdowns, and he was productive on the ground at Florida Atlantic. But his reception share in the offense got worse every single year. His freshman season reception share was better than his sophomore season, which was better than his junior season. Now, this doesn't tell me that he's a bad pass catcher. What it does tell me is that it could be a concern that others in the offense were taking work from him through the air. And we know that that matters. Successful fantasy running backs were good pass catchers in college. Not even because they had the raw ability to catch passes, but because their teams just wanted the ball in their hands. So going into the combine, a lot of draft scouts had Singletary as a top five running back in this year's class, even a top two or three running back. And I could at least understand it. It's a weak class, and he was really good in college. But then he measured in at just 5'7", 203 pounds. You can make your Devontae Freeman or Maurice Jones-Drew comps, but I think it's important to recognize that Devontae Freeman and MJD aren't normal running backs. Singletary then ran a 4.66 40-yard dash. At that size, that gave him an 86.1 speed score. And just to remind you guys, of the successful fantasy running backs that we've seen since 2011, the lowest speed score among that group was 91.7. I've seen people say that he's more quick than he is fast, and that's probably true. But I feel like using that as an excuse is similar to these flat earthers ignoring evidence right in front of their faces that the earth is a globe. We have evidence that Singletary is small and slow, and that he ceded some receiving work towards the end of his college career. Landing spot is everything for this draft class, but strictly as a prospect, I'm not in on Singletary. And I'm definitely out on Elijah Holyfield too. His production wasn't there in the first place, but the dude ran a 4.78. Lane Johnson and Ben Roethlisberger ran faster 40s than Elijah Holyfield did. The 40 isn't everything, but if Holyfield hits, he'll be an extreme outlier. I think some are probably expecting me to talk about David Montgomery or Benny Snell here as losers, but I think they did what was expected for the most part. Neither guy is fast. Snell's speed score was 95 and Montgomery's was 96.6. Those aren't ideal numbers, but they're not numbers that will push them out of relevancy. That's why Montgomery may still end up being my RB1 in this year's class. But I think the combine confirmed a lot of the feelings that we had about the running backs and wide receivers this season. In total, it's a bad running back class and it's a good receiver class. So make sure you adjust accordingly before your dynasty rookie drafts. That's going to do it for today's show, though. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And if you're on iTunes, please do me a favor and leave a rating or review. It's greatly, greatly appreciated. And I'm also on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. If you have a question for this week's mailbag show, you can send it to there, or you can email me at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you later in the week.